You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we'll talk about a new plan okayed by the U.S. Senate that would require women to register for the draft. First, a growing body of research is showing that poverty isn't just something that affects bank accounts and household budgets, it's also something that impacts health. Previous studies have linked poverty to depression and other mental health issues, but recent research out of Duke University says that growing up with scarce resources can actually cause genetic alterations and put people at greater risk for depression. Joining us now is one of the study's co-authors, Douglas Williamson. He's a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University. Doug, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So there are plenty of studies out there that have looked at poverty and depression. What makes this one different?
Well, the thing that's different about this study is we have begun to move from just looking at poverty and the stress of poverty in general to begin to identify what the brain-based mechanisms are that are affected by this pathway, and then also how genetics impact brain development during this critical period in development, adolescence.
So you chose to study adolescents. Why did you take that age group in particular?
Well, one of the main risk factors for depression that we've identified to date is a familial risk for it. So if you have a parent or brother and sister with lifetime depression, an aunt, uncle, or grandparent with lifetime depression, you're at a fourfold increased risk for developing a first episode of depression by age 18. Mm. As a result of that, our work has been focusing on the 12 to 15 year age range period to begin to look at them before they actually develop it in that critical 15 to 20 year window.
So when you're talking about that much higher likelihood of having that first depressive episode, if you have that family history, what is it about that family history? Is that actually a biological connection, or is that an atmosphere, or it's kind of the nature or nurture?
Well, technically, it could be both. And what you're capturing in that familial risk is both environmental exposures as well as a genetic exposure. And so the million-dollar question is, what aspect of either the shared environment or the genetics is contributing to that risk pathway?
So when you say someone who grew up in a lower socioeconomic background is more vulnerable, what do you mean? What are the characteristics of that type of life that of the people that you're studying?
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you introduced it. Not only does the stress of economics affect things like our bank account, but it can be affecting our children who grow up in those environments where mom and dad are struggling to make ends meet, pay the bills, working more than one job, working long hours. And so when we're looking at lower socioeconomic status, which is what we've focused on in this study, this is where folks might have $20,000, $30,000 a year that they're living on and having to support two or three children and maintain a household. It's not extreme poverty that we've observed in our study, which is a population-based study of adolescents growing up in San Antonio, Texas. But more of not having as much in order to make ends meet and live.
So are we looking more at what might be referred to as, say, the working poor, people who are not completely destitute but are really, really under-resourced?
Yes, that would be a very fair statement.
So how were you able to tell that these young people were at a greater risk for depression?
Well, what we did is we designed a study to identify 12 to 15-year-old adolescents, and then we randomly selected them from a 30-mile radius around San Antonio proper, and then brought them in and assessed them and their parents and identified lifetime psychiatric disorders in first and second degree relatives. And if they had high loading in both first and second degree with lifetime depression, they were brought in as high risk, or they had no depression in first degree relatives and little to none in second degree relatives, they comprised a low risk group.
We're talking with Douglas Williamson right now. He's professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University. He's a co-author of a study that looks at poverty and the effect that it can have on people's DNA and their risk of depression. So what are the biological workings at play here? Is there something particularly fluid about the development of an adolescent brain that makes them that much more susceptible?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the key brain regions, the amygdala, is sensitive to environmental stimuli that arouse anger and fear. And so the first biological response that you've got is mediated through the amygdala. The prefrontal cortex, which regulates, has inputs back to the amygdala, is developing during that period of time. So kids are much more, adolescents are much more excitable and much less able to inhibit that excitability during that period of development.
And a study from earlier this year from Washington University in St. Louis found that adverse circumstances early in life impacted the development and function of young brains. That seems like this might be connected to what you're looking at as well.
Yeah, it's very similar in that way. And by looking at the brain twice during development, once between 12 and 15, and a second time between 14 and 17, we're actually able to map developmental changes during that key period of adolescent development that changes, identify what's unique among kids at risk for depression compared to kids not at risk for depression, and really start to identify what the brain-based and genetic-based mechanisms that contribute to that risk pathway are.
This might be getting ahead of where your research is now, but do you have a sense of whether these changes can be reversed, or are these permanent changes that these young people who will be full adults soon will be carrying for the rest of their lives?
So one of the things that we haven't talked about so far is that the old school thinking in genetics is that you have a genetic structure that you inherit. It predicts things like eye color, height, hair color. It also has been previously identified that aspects of our genome predict increased risk for different types of behaviors and types of symptoms, sometimes by themselves, sometimes with symptoms. What we've been discovering through this process, what's called epigenetics, is that with DNA methylation, where on one aspect of our genome we have these little methyl tags that occur, it can actually increase or decrease the expression of that gene, which contributes to different amounts of proteins and downstream biological functions that are happening. And so environment, sleep, diet, temperature, all of these things can change the epigenetic state of our genome and is reversible. And importantly, folks have begun to identify is transmittable to the next generation, making them more or less susceptible.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. So it sounds like there are certain factors, genetic factors that are there, but it's almost like different circumstances either turn the volume up or down on them.
That's correct. Okay. That's absolutely correct.
So this sounds like it's really pretty groundbreaking research and opening up whole different ways of understanding what goes on in the brain. It also seems like it's opening up a lot of opportunities for different ways to approach these problems and these issues that people are living with.
Absolutely. And we're still at the very early stages in this work, but you could fast forward 20 years from now and see how aspects of these early epigenetic changes could be used to screen people who are vulnerable for developing a first episode of depression that has lifelong implications and intervene earlier.
And so looking at it on a very concrete level, what might healthcare providers, say in a clinical setting, or say a school nurse, or even people who are not medically trained but are interacting with young people, what are some of the applications that you could see this having?
At this point, stress affects all of our lives. It affects our children as they're growing, and particularly vulnerable kids. And so I think the first line at this point in time is helping kids learn to manage and deal healthily with stress that they're exposed to. Sometimes it's things that they've got themselves involved in or familial environments that they're coming from. Again, down the road, 20 years from now, I think we will begin to have blood-based tests that may index things like DNA methylation of particular genes that can be used to help identify kids who could benefit more from intervention.
You're looking specifically at depression, but are there indications that other psychological issues and conditions might also be the result of some of these genetic mutations that happen?
Absolutely. In fact, I am part of the Consortium to Alleviate PTSD, which is a national research action plan that has identified a consortium to ameliorate the war scars of post-traumatic stress disorder. And there, what we're doing is we're looking at human postmortem tissue, we're looking at pre-post deployment samples, pre-post treatment to identify what these genetic biomarkers are that identify the presence of PTSD, the risk to develop PTSD, and indicators of treatment response. And so there's one where we actually have a very large consortium effort to identify the molecular, i.e. genetic signatures of that disorder.
And as we wrap up, Doug, is this something that might also have influence on public policy? Because there's certainly medical applications and psychological applications, but a lot of those are driven by public policy as well.
Absolutely. And I think the move in our nation towards precision medicine and beginning to integrate biology into understanding our health trajectories is exactly headed in that direction.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Doug Williamson, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University. He co-authored a study finding that growing up in poverty can affect people's DNA and put them at higher risk for depression. Coming up after the news, women could soon be required to register for the Selective Service under a plan approved by the U.S. Senate. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.